In his State of the Union address, President Bush challenged the nation to reduce our gasoline use by 20% within 10 years. To help meet this 20 and 10 goal, the president called for growing our renewable and alternative fuel use to 35 billion gallons by the year 2017. Today, we're taking an important first step toward meeting the president's goal of 20 and 10, of jumping off that treadmill of dependency on foreign oil. Through our nation's first comprehensive renewable fuel standard, EPA is dramatically increasing the use of renewable fuels, such as ethanol and biodiesel, in the United States. While the Energy Policy Act of 2005 set more modest levels for the RFS rulemaking, the flexible design of our program allows for adaptation of new fuels and new standards. Put simply, the renewable fuel standard offers the American people a hat trick. It protects the environment, it strengthens our energy security, and supports America's farmers. Under the program, the annual amount of required renewable fuel use increases each year, so that by the year 2012, 7.5 billion gallons of fuel being pumped into the gas tanks across the country will be made from homegrown crops and renewable resources. The RFS also calls upon America's innovative spirit by providing incentives to spur advances in cutting-edge technology, infrastructure, and even farming methods. For example, we're excited about the real possibility of one day producing renewable fuel from agricultural and industrial byproducts, such as switchgrass and wood chips. For years, our nation's rolling farm fields have filled America's breadbaskets. Now, by helping meet President Bush's renewable energy goals, these same fields are filling America's gas tanks. The energy security and economic benefits of this program are clear. However, expanding the use of renewable fuels has an additional benefit that's near and dear to my heart because it's good for the environment. Under the Bush administration, our nation's air is cleaner today than it was a generation ago. The program we are finalizing today builds on our clean air progress by cutting petroleum use by nearly 4 billion gallons by the year 2012. Well, what does this mean for our environment? It means the increased use of renewable fuels under the RFS will prevent the release of greenhouse gas emissions equivalent of up to 13 million metric tons. That's equal to the carbon dioxide emissions of nearly 2.3 million automobiles. The renewable fuel standard is another tool in our ever-expanding toolbox to reduce America's greenhouse gas emissions in an aggressive yet practical way. Under President Bush's leadership, EPA is addressing our nation's growing energy demand in a way that supports our goals for a clean environment and a healthy economy. But we can't do it on our own. I want to thank all of our stakeholders for helping us bring the many benefits of this exciting new program to our nation. This includes our state partners, oil refineries, ethanol and biodiesel producers, environmental organizations, and the agricultural community. The renewable fuel standard is an important first step toward meeting President Bush's 20 and 10 goal. Moving America down the road toward greater energy security, stronger local economies, and healthier lives. Now I'd like to invite my friend, my colleague, Secretary Bodman, to talk more about how the Bush administration is working to meet the President's ambitious renewable fuel goals. Secretary Bodman.
Thank you, Steve. I'm very pleased to be here with you this afternoon. Nicole, I'm pleased to be here with you as well. Let me get right to the point. The fuel standard that we are announcing today is a critical step in increasing the nation's energy security. But it is only the first step of an aggressive strategy that the president has laid out to to reduce America's consumption of gasoline by 20% in 10 years. We're doing so by increasing our national use of alternative fuels and improving the energy efficiency of our economy. Even in the short time since this standard was established in the Energy Policy Act of 2005, we have seen quite significant increases in the development and use of alternative fuels. Technological advances, led by our nation's scientists and engineers, have made it possible to consider moving aggressively to displace even larger volumes of gasoline than we thought possible just 2 years ago. The President believes that we must capitalize on these advances as quickly as possible. And so, as Administrator Johnson said, the President has called for increasing the standard over the next 10 years up to the equivalent of 35 billion gallons of gasoline as alternative fuels. I would also add that including all alternative fuels in the mix, as the President's plan would do, maximizes the benefit to our nation's energy security. It does so by reducing our heavy reliance on gasoline and imported sources of oil. I'd just like to make two additional points to address some of the questions that we frequently get on this topic. First off, some have questioned whether the President's proposal is overly ambitious. They ask, can the United States really produce that much alternative fuel in the next decade? And to this, I say that is exactly the point. This is the very definition of an aggressive challenge. If we are to truly expand our energy horizons, then we must set the bar high. In essence, we have to bet on technology, and I think it's a very good bet. We also must signal to private investors that our policy environment supports sustained investment in alternative fuels. This is a critical point. People carrying out this work in the marketplace need to know that our government's commitment to clean, renewable, and alternative fuels is strong, and it is long-term. Secondly, let me be clear. This administration recognizes that human activity is contributing to changes in our Earth's climate. There is no question that this is a serious challenge, and we continue to take action to address it. We believe that our national focus must be on developing and deploying solutions that are technically and economically sound. And this proposal, which would cut projected emissions of carbon dioxide and other harmful pollutants, is one such step toward a solution. I look forward to working with Congress to put the President's aggressive standards in place as soon as possible. We strongly encourage the Congress to pass the enhanced alternative fuel standard, and that we would like them to pass it before the start of the summer driving season so that the right signal is sent to our citizens. That would really provide the kind of signal to the American public that the executive and legislative branches of our government are united in our objective to substantially increase the energy security of this great nation. With that, I would like to turn the microphone over to my colleague, Administrator Nicole Mason, for her comments.
Good afternoon. It is such a privilege to be here today with Secretary Bodman and Administrator Johnson on behalf of Secretary of Transportation Mary Peters to talk about the different components of the President's Comprehensive Energy Security Plan. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, NHTSA, has the responsibility to oversee and set the Corporate Average Fuel Economy, or CAFE, standards for passenger cars and light trucks. A key component of the President's 20 in 10 plan is to significantly boost fuel economy standards for passenger cars. His aggressive goal for better fuel efficiency would save 8.5 billion gallons of gasoline annually by 2017, reduction consumption 5%. To achieve this, we have sent draft legislation to Capitol Hill that would give the Secretary of Transportation the statutory authority to reform and raise the fuel economy standards for passenger cars. The Bush administration has a proven history of raising fuel economy standards for light trucks. We raised the CAFE standards for light trucks for 7 consecutive years from 2005 to 2011. Our most recent light truck proposals will save a total of an estimated 10.7 billion gallons of gasoline over the lifetime of the vehicles sold from 2008 to 2011. NHTSA is seeking the authority to reform the CAFE standards for passenger cars rather than setting an arbitrary fuel economy standard. Everyone shares the ultimate goal of saving fuel, but just setting a number could have negative consequences for safety and result in negative economic impacts. In 1975, when Congress wrote the original CAFE standard, it did so by taking the average fuel economy number for the fleet and doubling it. Today, NHTSA can and does perform a much more sophisticated analysis on how to determine the CAFE standard. We believe that having experts develop a new CAFE standard using sound science and data in an open and reviewable rulemaking process is the more responsible way to reach better fuel savings. We need Congress to authorize the Secretary of Transportation to reform CAFE for passenger cars. If the administration's draft legislation is enacted soon, NHTSA will begin a rulemaking. So cars rolling off the assembly line for model year 2010 will have to meet a higher CAFE standard and make their contribution to our energy and national security by saving more fuel. And again, I thank the administrator and the secretary.
Well, thanks, Nicole. Thank you, Sam, for joining us today. We'd be happy to take a number of questions. Yes, sir.
It's Chris Baltimore with the Reuters News Agency.
Hi, Chris.
Hi. This is for Mr. Administrator and also Secretary Bobbin, if you wish.
Sure.
The program that you're rolling out today could be overshadowed somewhat by the Supreme Court's ruling a week or so back that the EPA should be regulating CO2 tailpipe emissions from cars. You claim that your program will remove 13 million metric tons of CO2. Don't you think if you were to put in place more stringent regulations for automobile tailpipe emissions, you could be doing more?
Well, as an administration, we are concerned about the effects of greenhouse gas emissions, and that's why we have, in fact, an aggressive yet practical strategy for dealing with greenhouse gas emissions. Today is an important first step. With mandating 7.5 billion gallons of renewable fuels, but we're not finished. We are evaluating and looking at our options and what actions that we will take as a result of the Supreme Court decision. But today, not prepared to announce that. But today is an important first step in helping to not only help our energy security, help the environment, help American agriculture, but also to focus on addressing greenhouse gas emissions as well.
Minnesota asked for a waiver some years back so that allowing them to use 20% blend of ethanol. Where does that stand?
We are working with the state in evaluating that 20% and the technology associated with being able to burn that. At this point, we are still in the working together, and I expect it's going to take some months as we sort through. There's one is the fuel standard aspect of it, and then there's also the can the automobiles or transportation sector efficiently and effectively use the 20%. Within EPA, there is not active testing, but there is. We are aware of active research that's being conducted to explore the 20% fuel. Of course, one of the other things that the president is very interested in is the increased use of flex fuel vehicles and actually moving to an 85% blend. With moving to an 85% blend, you not only get significant savings from an environmental standpoint, obviously that really improves our energy security as well.
Administrator, is EPA willing to regulate CO2 emissions from cars now that the Supreme Court has given you the okay to do that? And if not, will you allow the states to go ahead with their plans to do so?
We are evaluating the Supreme Court decision, and we're looking at our options and what actions that we may take. Today's premature to talk about it. I will make the announcement that we do have a petition from California, and that we do intend to publish a Federal Register notice announcing a notice and comment period. That notice, Federal Register notice, should be coming out shortly, which will begin the process for evaluation of the petition that we have before us. They cannot go ahead until after we make our determination, and we are initiating that process shortly.
Hello again, Jeff Young with Living on Earth. Do alternative fuels, does that include liquefied coal, and what's the difference between an alternative fuel standards and renewable fuel standards?
Alternative fuel standards are as defined in the Energy Policy Act, and it does include so-called coal to liquids as a component. As best we can tell at this point in time, it will not be a particularly important component, but it nevertheless was included because of its contributing to an enhancement of our energy security in this country, and that's the reason for it. I think, something that makes every bit of sense to do.
How does a liquefied coal fit into the environmental goals of using alternative fuel? It seems to me it would increase greenhouse gases, for example.
Well, it depends on the process that is used. It is certainly possible, for example, to sequester carbon dioxide that the coal that is used in order to convert the coal into a liquid fuel. And so it would depend on the process that one would use.
If I could add to what Secretary Bodman said, is that we're all interested in clean technology. So just as technologies are developed and further refined for cellulosic biomass, we're also encouraging the development of the clean coal technologies that will enable us to benefit the use of coal to liquid, but doing it in a clean way. So we're certainly wanting to encourage the clean technology. Yes, sir, in the back. Back. Yes.
Justin Hyde with the Detroit Free Press.
Yes.
The fuel industry last year outdid the RFS standard that you've set for 2007 and appear to be on track to outdo the 2012 standard, perhaps as early as this year. How does setting the standard affect the market, if they're already beating it?
Well, let me ask Secretary Bodman to add to any comments that I have. As you correctly point out, the market has responded and responded in an extraordinary fashion, and we're seeing the legislative targets, their specific targets every year from 2006 through 2012, and the market has responded and, in fact, exceeding those targets. That's outstanding. Of course, as Secretary pointed out, and as I mentioned as well, we're very interested in Congress passing the alternative fuel standard, which certainly brings that mark from 7.5 billion all the way up to 35 billion gallons. And so anything that we can do to encourage the market to be responsive and to exceed what the current standard is on the way to the revised standard, we think that's a good thing.
Just would add, I started out life as a person in the private sector, and this is the first time in over 40 years of experience in the so-called venture capital industry that venture capitalists are putting very substantial sums of money as investments in renewable and alternative fuels, and it is something that we worry a lot, obviously, what we do in the government to try to, and rightly so, because that's our job,
But in addition to that, we have this parallel process going on where there aren't generally press conferences like this one. There aren't generally opportunities to discuss what is happening. But every now and then you get a glimpse of it, and this number, I think it's over $2 billion, have been invested by private investors during the first quarter of this current calendar year. And so we see very substantial increases, and I think that's what lends the level of confidence that I have that we can make this 35 billion gallon target, even though there will no doubt be problems of getting cellulosic ethanol up and going in an effective way, because we're going to effectively need that when we start to run into, one could see doubling the amount of renewable fuel that we have generally from generated from corn in order to go much beyond that, and that would put you at, let's say, roughly 15 billion gallons. To go up to the 35, we're going to really need a major contribution from cellulosic ethanol, and that's why so much effort is being put into the research on that particular subject.
Hi, I'm Mike Ball with Air Daily. Administrator Johnson, as part of the EPA's review of the Supreme Court decision, are you looking at the possibility of regulating power plants, or does EPA still believe it doesn't have the authority to regulate power plants as well under a separate section of the Clean Air Act?
Well, as I said, we're looking at what options and actions that we want to follow as a result of the Supreme Court action. I mean, there are a number of factors that certainly taking into consideration, and that is, you know, what are the technologies that are available or ones that we've been investing in. Certainly Secretary Bodman and Department of Energy. I just came back from a meeting with the environment ministers in Potsdam, Germany, and there was a wide recognition that for discussion of global greenhouse gas emissions, it needs to be done in the context of a sustainable economy. So what are the economic issues that we need to also be part of our consideration? And then last but not least, and this is more in the broader context, in the international context, is that we in the developed nations, and certainly the United States, has an unparalleled commitment and, in fact, expenditure, $35 billion from 2001 to today. That's more than any other nation in the world to address global climate change. And so how do we better engage those countries that are developing, and how to better engage them in the discussion and progress for addressing global climate change? So there's a myriad of issues that we're working on, some of which are directly as a result of the Supreme Court decision, others that we've talked about, the President is very interested in, we all are very interested in getting the CAFE standard revised. We're interested in having the alternative fuel standard, 35 billion gallons, be the legislative mark. And so we're continuing on to address global climate change, and we'll work both domestically and with our international partners to do so.
It's Philip Brasher with the Des Moines Register. Couple of issues. Could you address, given the way this ethanol industry is growing, your reasons for moving forward with easing these emission controls on dry mill ethanol plants? I understand you're fairly close to coming out with that. And second, could the administration support this RFS that's been proposed by Senators Bingaman and Domenici?
We've taken no position on the legislation with regard to the issue of the wet mill, dry mill situation. What we as a nation are faced with is that if you're using corn to produce alcohol for human consumption, you're under one air standard. If you're producing corn and using it to produce alcohol to be used as a fuel, there's a different standard. And what we are looking at is that doesn't make sense. There should be a level playing field, a consistent approach that is health protective, environmentally protective, and that's what we're in the process right now in the rulemaking process of trying to make that decision as to how to do that. Yes, ma'am, in the blue.
Christine Shea with Phoenix TV of Hong Kong. I understand this is the first FS here in the United States. I just wonder how does setting the new standard has to do with another country, for example, using China as an example?
Well, this is the you're correct that this is the first renewable fuel standard in the United States. As part of our strategic economic dialogue discussion with China, part of my discussions last week when I was in India, working with our other country partners, is we see a great opportunity for developing nations to adopt a similar kind of approach. That is, energy security is very much an issue for China, as is the environmental issues, as is supporting agricultural sector. And so here's a great opportunity to enjoy the hat trick in China as we are in the United States, and that's why we're actively working with our partners in China, Secretary Bodman and I and others, actively working with our partners there in China to help in any way we can so that we can address both our energy security needs as well as our environmental concerns at the same time. So thanks very much. Appreciate it. Thanks.